Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At the end of the day, football, it's a funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
Hello, welcome to episode 20 of Comedians Talking About Football. It's an England special, and if I'm honest, I thought it would be a little bit more of a celebration. This was a good idea, wasn't it, Josh?
Yeah, I'm really glad I put my name down for this. I'm also ill, just to add to the vibe.
Oh, mate. So, if you're listening to this in the far future, we're recording this the day after England lost the Euro 2020 final to Italy. It feels strange today waking up with no football. I don't know what you're supposed to do this summer with no football. What's everyone been doing? Because we haven't had the weather, so I'm not sure what everyone's been up to. Love Island, I suppose. So we're going to talk about England today. England's the team, and who better to get to talk about England? Someone who's actually played for them, and also has won the award of English Comedian of the Year before. It's Josh Pugh. Josh Pugh, how are you doing? You well?
I'm great, Sam. Yeah, well, I'm not great, actually. Same as you've just said there, kind of. It's just, I'm just sad it's all over as much as anything.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of feels like, you know, the last day of, you know, the day you get back from holiday. It's kind of, oh, well, what do we look forward to now? Do you know what I mean? And also, yeah. I feel terrible. I think I drank too much during the game.
I feel rough. A lot of people have been saying they feel really rough today. I didn't actually drink much, but I really just felt dead this morning, like no energy.
Yeah, because I suppose emotionally you've been through it as well. You've been through the ringer emotionally. You can't underestimate how tiring that is.
Yeah, man. I wonder what penalty shootout does to the heart, just as a fan.
Oh, it takes years off.
Where did you watch it last night then?
I watched it at a working men's club near me. I've watched the games in a few different places. I've watched two there. I watched a Scotland game at home. I watched a Ukraine game at a gig, and I watched a Denmark game at a gig in Wales.
Right.
So it's an interesting. And then the final was back, kind of. But yeah, I was. But it was that moment as well when the kind of the final whistle went, the lights just came on and everybody just piled out the place instantly. I was like, oh, that's it then, is it? it's immediately back to reality, isn't it?
It was that sort of I didn't realise as well. I mean, because I can't watch penalties. I can't do it. I didn't watch, and I thought it might have been a lucky thing. So I didn't watch the Colombia penalties. I didn't watch the, what's it called? The Europe Cup of Champion Nations, whatever it's called. Didn't watch that either. And we won them. So I thought, well, if I don't watch this one, we'll win. And when we went ahead, I thought, this is it. I've saved England. I am. Yeah. It's my eyes that affect it.
I'm not sure about this new angle. There's no, the new camera angle, you know, Sam.
Yeah, it's very, first of all, it's very FIFA.
Yeah.
And also it's very intense. Like, if you notice, they go behind them, then they slowly approach them from behind.
Yeah, it's kind of, I think we're so used to watching football from the side.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it works, but people seem to like it.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people like it, but for me, it's too intense.
It's like you say, you know, when you go around your mate's house and they're playing with a different camera angle on FIFA, it just throws you off. Let's get back to broadcast. Why are you like bird's eye? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It was a strange one. And then because I kind of was reacting from everyone there. I was watching it in a pub. It was actually a pizza place of all places. And it was... I was sort of listening and watching them, and I had my wife with me who was reacting, probably one of the most leery people in there actually. And then she was reacting. And then I knew that if they scored, we were out. And then Pickford makes a fantastic save.
Yeah.
And I thought great. And then when Saka missed, I didn't realize it was over. So suddenly everyone went, oh, then I just heard Italy are the champions. I was like, it sort of took my breath away. I was like, oh, that's it. It can't be over.
So fast, didn't it? Like the joy of Pickford's save, the distance between that and then the Saka miss, it seemed like a second.
Yeah.
It's like being attacked. It was happening too quick.
Quick slit in the throat. Gone.
Yeah, that's what it was like. You know, someone just comes behind and just twists your head in like a James Bond film. Gone.
Oh, but it happens to me all the time. What did you make of the game overall?
It was a strange one, mate. It was we started so well. And if you go two up, it's a completely different game. But Italy, you've got to give them real credit. The real streetwise, tough winners, aren't they?
Yeah.
Do you mean that they get through the game? And that we're actually happy to get to extra time in the end, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
It's so hard when the momentum starts going away from you like that. It's so hard to get it back, isn't it? I don't really know what you do.
I think, in a way, our best chances came early in the game. I mean, after we scored, their heads went a bit and they didn't play like Italy till about 25, 30 minutes into the game. And then I think there was a few opportunities there where I thought, if we gone two ahead, we could have seen the game out. But it's unfortunate. But at the end of the day, it was Italy, and we've seen the way they play throughout this tournament. And to take them to extra time and penalties is a real achievement, I think.
Yeah, if you're being honest with it, Italy are probably the best team in the tournament, and England are probably the second best team in the tournament.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've done what we did. We did brilliantly, but it doesn't take away the feeling of you're still gutted, ain't you? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It could have been. But you know, people say, oh, the World Cup next year, but it's not, you don't start at the final.
No, I completely agree with that.
It's like you've gone all the way back down the snake. You know, you're not still, you know, it's so hard to get to a final. You can't just think we're going to be in the semis and finals every time. That's not a given.
I completely agree with you. And it is that frustration of like, I had that a bit at the end of the 2018 World Cup, because we got to the semis there and I felt that was an opportunity to go through to a final. And then when we went out, a lot of people go, well, we'll win Euro 2020. That's a given. And I was thinking, well, it's not a given. We've got 2 years for a start. You know, and it's the same sort of feeling now, to be honest. I mean, granted, we did get to a final. Fantastic. But we didn't win. And, but it is that thing now of going, you know, if we get to a semi-final of the World Cup, then a final of a Euros and then another final of a World Cup, then Jesus, we've done well. But if we don't win any of them.
Yeah. So, I mean, Southgate's record is, it's unbelievable. There's no way he won't be the manager in the next year in the World Cup. Why would you change anything?
What do you think of him overall for this? I mean, that's a strange one because I know you've obviously played a bit of football, and it's funny when I ask people these questions because they're like, well, how can we comment, you know, comedians talking about football? I feel like I should balance it out one day and get some footballers in to critique some comedy.
Yeah. But you know what? Actually, it's weird you say that because Southgate, he's the only England manager I can think of who I think he could manage outside of football. He could be a manager of a business.
Yeah.
You know, he's so level-headed and pragmatic. You know, he kind of... Take football out of it. He's a good manager, isn't he?
Yeah, he'd book a good comedy night.
He makes people
night.
Feel good. He would, yeah, he would. He makes everyone feel good. He makes good decisions tactically. He's level-headed. He takes the blame. You know, yeah. He's all about the players and the inner circle, but also he kind of... He's also an FA guy as well.
He is, yeah. He's a well-balanced... I've got a dream now, I think, to make him book a comedy night. I think I want that to make that happen.
Mason Mount would be on it.
He'd be right there in the centre. Nice middle spot for him. He'd MC it himself, Southgate. He'd be one of those friendly comedians like who somehow can control a rowdy audience. Someone like a Toby Haddock, someone like that. Just like that.
he looks a bit like, remember Stevie Ritchie off The X Factor?
Yeah.
Name Stevie, nice to meet you, can you spare a minute? That guy. He always reminds me of him a bit. But you can't imagine anything coming out about Southgate. Like, there's no skeletons in the closet there.
No, not at all. He's almost like, for a long time, we sort of considered him too boring for the sake of, like, he became almost like a novelty. When he was first put in the role as manager, what was your take on it? Because, I mean... I think I was like the majority. I wasn't very enthusiastic about it. And we've been talking about this recently, that it's amazing what he has achieved, because when he took over, if you sort of ignore the Allardyce stuff, England was in an absolute state. I mean, you think in the last 7-8 years, we crashed out of a World Cup with 1 point in 2014. We were humiliated by losing to Iceland at Euro 2016.
And
when we did crash out, there was a lot of pundits and professionals saying, there wasn't like one clear answer. It wasn't like, oh, well, we're going to get this guy in and he's going to sort it out, which is a bit like what they did when we didn't qualify for Euro 2008. They went, well, Capello will sort it out. He's the Real Madrid manager. Didn't get anything done. But at that point, they were blaming the players, the managers. They were talking about the whole FA coaching system, how we nurture young talent. Is it the Premier League? Is the Premier League the problem? And then with all these issues, it felt like it was going to be decades before we achieved anything. In comes Southgate and does a brilliant job, but I don't even remember him really being given the role in the first place. What was your thoughts on it?
Yeah, same. As you were talking, then I was kind of thinking of how I can't even remember how I felt. It just felt like, you know, this is going to be a slow burn with him.
Mm.
You know, and he's kind of there's no ego to him. That's what I like. You know, he's not. I remember when McLaren came in and immediately dropped Beckham, or you know, that's like him. That's what it's like. He's quite quietly confident in what he does, I think. I think he just quietly backs himself, and I quite like that. I've hated England for so long, mate. Hated watching them, hated everything they're about. When I think of, I always think of Scott Park on his hands and knees on the edge of his own 18-yard box, like blocking, like parking the bus against USA and all this. I think, God, we've come so far since then. And all this... I think the way he's approached the tournament has been perfect. We get carried away with, we always say, what great attacking talent we've got. And we have, but not, these are not, you know, it's not as good, you know, we're not lightning. We're not absolutely dangerous. You know, he doesn't get swept away in anything. Like, look how he's used Grealish and stuff. He's been, he just knows what he's doing, man. I like him.
Yeah, same. I agree. I mean, as a manager, you're never going to be perfect anyway. And there's a lot of people who you know, rightly or wrongly, criticised him for last night, not changing the team too early, not picking the right penalty takers or whatever. But I always think, like, for all managers get things wrong. The highest quality managers get things wrong sometimes. To only get a couple of things wrong in an entire tournament is an amazing achievement, I think, and shows how far he's come. Because I feel like in the World Cup, a few mistakes were made that resulted in us conceding quite a few goals. It resulted in us losing to Belgium, you know, not finishing off games that we should have done against Colombia, etc. But But this, I think he's been almost faultless.
I think as well, he, at the same time, I think when you think of 2018, all of our goals were from set pieces.
Yeah.
That shows you you've got a great coach.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? That's the one thing the coach can really control is the set pieces.
Yeah.
But yeah, and it's going to make mistakes, but nothing where you think, God, what was he thinking? It's just opinions, isn't it, rather than declaring the obvious, yeah. he's fucked up.
It's even not Kane on corners or anything like that.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, even the penalty takers, there's still a logic to it. You know, they've obviously done it in training and they're the best penalty takers, so they've been put forward. I mean, he's not just chucked a 19-year-old in the limelight, has he? You know, it's a calculated decision, which unfortunately didn't pay off, but you know.
Yeah, well, it is. Did you think we were going to win?
Yeah, until the start of the second half last night. all day I thought England, but honestly, it was uncharted territory, wasn't it? I had no idea what to expect from the game itself at all. All day I didn't know. Actually, the opposite. I kind of thought, well, both teams would want to concede early. Mm. And then when Shaw went and did that, I thought, oh my God, that's the dream. It's a dream for us and it's a nightmare for them.
Of anyone I wanted to score, I think it would have been Luke Shaw. I mean, I love that he's now added his names, Martin Peters, Sir Geoff Hurst, Luke Shaw. If someone had told you when we went out against, you know, it's one of those things as well, a bit like I was going to mention a minute ago when we were talking about, I was in the same position as you. Come the end of Euro 2016, I was done with England. I thought, what's the point? I didn't think we'd qualify for the next World Cup, if I'm being honest. But if someone had turned around to you and gone, we're going to make a semi-final and a final, you'd bite the hand off. But also, if someone then told you that the next... They'd turn around and said, who do you think the next player is to score in a major tournament final? It's Dele Alli, Harry Kane.
Dele Alli, yeah.
And then... Can I stop you there? Luke Shaw. I don't even think was playing regular club football at that point.
No. He's only like, is he 25, Luke Shaw?
Yeah, 24, I couldn't believe 25. That. Because, I mean, he was incredible. He was in the 2014 squad, I think.
It's madness. I was looking at Southgate, obviously after the penalty. He played in Euro 2000.
Yeah.
So he played in 96, 98. He went to 98 and 2000. Yeah. I didn't realise he'd been to three tournaments.
Was he at World Cup 2002 or was he gone by then?
He was gone by then.
Yeah.
That was because Ferdinand and that came then.
Mm.
But yeah, he's a good player, Southgate, you know. Good footballing centre-half.
He was. I felt really sorry for him. I mean, I remember at the time, even in 96 as a kid, my dad being like, right, he's only ever... my dad being like, I feel sorry for him because he's always going to be remembered as the guy who missed the penalty. Yeah. And he said, and he shouldn't be because he was probably, him and Tony Adams were unbelievable that tournament.
Yeah, he was super.
Centre back, fantastic. Yeah.
How old were you in 96, Sam?
I was seven.
Yeah, so I was seven. And that's the first one I can remember.
Yeah.
It was 96. Remember the Poborski chip, the Scotland game.
Yeah.
And then I just remember Muller always scoring in all the games.
I'll be honest, that wasn't... Do you ever feel like with football that you never forget your first heartbreak?
Yeah.
Like, especially with England. And weirdly, I didn't... I was more upset about World Cup 98 than I was the Euros, I think, because I watched the Euros, but I didn't get... Because I was only familiar with league football because we hadn't qualified for World Cup 94. So I hadn't really seen many England games. I saw them playing and I saw them playing well, but I knew that in the Football League, you win some, you lose some. So we lost this game. I remember the next morning, because my dad actually went to the game. My dad went to the Euro 96 semi-final. He was right in the corner when Southgate missed. And he came out the next day and he was gutted. And I was like, well, never mind. We're going to win the next game, aren't we, Dad? He was like, no, it's no. We're out. Yeah. I was like, what do you mean? I was kind of confused. Like, well, but why can't we play?
But I can remember 98 was horrible as well because I loved Beckham.
Yeah, same. That's Beckham. What I'm wearing the 98 shirt today. I would be wearing the 2020 one, but I kept it as a lucky shirt and I didn't wash it from the very first game all the way. And in that time, it's been covered in beer, dirt, nervous sweat. It stinks. It had to last night when I took it off, my wife was like, it can't stay in the bedroom, it has to go in the conservatory.
A lot of my mates bought the knockoff ones for £20 off a bloke
nice.
out of his car. And I think a few of them had washed it a few times leading up to, and by the final yesterday, they're a lot tighter and faded.
Yeah, I mean? Bet. So what you say with 98, I was the same. I mean, that Argentina game was one of the most dramatic football games, I think, of all time.
Yeah.
It had everything. Yeah. But I was the same with you. I was a huge David Beckham fan, and him being sent off was gutting.
It was at the time, because you just remember him getting booked, getting the red. You're like, what the hell's that for? That's for nothing. Then it zoomed in, you're like,
yeah.
So unlike him as well, as you know.
Because he learned a lot from that red card, I think. In a way, it made him. Because that next season, he won the treble. He was very disciplined. Ferguson kept him on the right track and everything. And he became kind of this national hero since then.
Yeah.
But I kind of missed before him around 98 when he was a real dick. Do you remember he was a bit of a dickhead? And I quite miss him like that.
A bit cocky, wasn't he then?
Yeah, because I was watching back the goals of previous tournaments. And when he scores the... you know, like we always remember Beckham when he scores kind of whole, like really like just like the pride of England with his arms out. And when he scored against Colombia in 98, he runs, he like pushes everyone away. He's trying to like celebrate with him. He runs up to the fans and then he does this kind of shagging movement. He kind of like, it's worth watching on YouTube. He does this kind of like, it's just kind of like humps the air for a bit and puts on this kind of sex face. And I think, I kind of miss that. Do you know what I mean? I kind of miss that Beckham. He was a dick.
Yeah. There's, I don't know, these kind of, I feel like there's no dicks in the England team. Mm. Well, Grealish, isn't it? Grealish out of everybody. When I say Grealish is a dick, I mean like in a good way.
Yeah, he's got a bit of character to him.
Bit of swagger about him, isn't he? Do you know, a bit of a maverick.
I feel
you
like
it all be kind of you can't have a team of Southgates, can you? You need one or two.
No, you're right. And I think Foden as well, obviously a bit of a shagger. So it's it's all good. What do you make of the England journey to the final? So the group stages through to the knockouts, because in 2018 there was a bit of this got on my tits a bit when people sort of went, oh, we just got an easy route to the semi final. I don't think there's any easy route really in any major tournament, you know.
You forget this is the finals,
mm.
you know. So you've qualified well to get. Do you mean you've won your qualifying group?
Yeah.
Do you mean so you've done work to get an easier route as well? You know,
it's absolutely. And you know, people were saying, "Oh, we finished second in the group. Then we went through, you know, Colombia. We sort of got through there on penalties, and then it was Sweden, a kind of weak team that had championship players in, and then you know, through to Croatia, who people seem to think we should have beaten. But then you go to this tournament. I don't think you know. Yeah, all right, we had a 0-0 with Scotland, but I feel like the occasion got to everyone that day.
Yeah, I was a bit disheartened after the Scotland game. I'll be honest, I was a bit I was a bit jealous actually of what Scotland had. A bit of like, well, it's easy to be the underdog, isn't it? It's much easier to be the underdog in those games.
It is, and it was a funny one where I think because we'd only just beaten Croatia 1-0 at the time, the 0-0 with Scotland was a bit disheartening. But I think had that been 0-0 with the Ukraine, I don't think we would have minded. With the Czech Republic, I don't think we would have minded. But I think the occasion got to everyone. They probably just shouldn't have been showing clips of Euro 96 for the whole week up to it. Do you know what I mean? How many times did you see Gazza's goal?
On everything as well. Like, everything, like news, like this morning, like everything. It's Gazza. I always think that celebration, there's a slightly awkward amount of time he's lying there waiting for people to come to it, don't they? He arrives too early.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He gets there too early.
I didn't notice till recently that part of that, because I always remember Shearer being there, Gary Neville, but I was like, oh yeah, Jamie Redknapp was there. Probably his greatest performance in a England shirt was.
He changed the game when he came. He was a bit of a Grealish actually, when he kind of was coming off the bench and changing stuff.
I love that he's turning into his dad at the moment. Have you noticed this?
No.
He's turning, his personality wise, he's turning his dad. I always remember him kind of being a bit of a geezer. You know, you see him on Sky News talking about who he's shagged and all that. He's like, you do a bit of that, don't you? You do that. And he was on that Peter Crouch thing, which I'll talk about in a bit. This Peter Crouch show that's been on late at night on BBC One. And he was on there and he just sat there, just going, oh, well, they're all terrific, aren't they? Oh, lovely boys. And I was like, oh, great. He's just turning into his dad. Everything's terrific. Oh, he's a lovely day. He's cracking day out for all the family.
You know, Harry Redknapp knows what he's doing, you know.
Yeah.
He can use Zoom. Don't worry about that. Every time, I don't even know what... Sandra, get this Zoom. Like, you've done Zoom gigs every... You've done Zoom stuff every day for about 2 years. Like, you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
I can't get this bloody thing off. Sandra, what are you going to do with me, Sandra? It is Sandra, isn't it?
Yeah.
I can't even use a toaster. Yeah, you can. Come on. I can't even use a phone. This is my first time using a phone. Oh, come on. You know what you're doing. It's like Roy Keane. You mean they're all playing, you know, they've got to, Roy Keane's got to be like unforgiving about anything, isn't he?
He does good, Roy Keane, not to corpse with Micah Richards as well. Micah Richards wasn't given the kind of the lowdown that, look, Roy Keane is playing this very serious character. Yeah. He just goes in and laughs at his face every day. It's amazing.
That works so well, doesn't it, them two?
Yeah. Brilliant. Double act, those two. Love them.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah. Because Roy Keane, I think Roy Keane likes him as well.
He does, yeah.
They shouldn't get on, but I think he's infectious, isn't he?
Oh, massively. Have you seen him on his Instagram, Mark Richard? He just sort of sneaks up on him with his phone.
No.
It's amazing. Yeah, there's one where he goes to his hotel room, like the morning of them covering a match, and he just goes, Roy, can I come in? And he just turns in, he's got his camera on. And I think it's just Roy Keane sat there in like a nice sort of old man fleece with his glasses on, eating sugar puffs. And then just Michael Richards films him and pisses himself laughing for a minute.
Yeah.
And there's another one where I think he approached him after a game once, and Roy Keane's on his own. He's just stalking him, and he runs up behind him. He just goes, excuse me, sir. Can you tell me what the score was, please? And then Roy Keane turns around really angry, expecting it to be a fan. And it's just, again, just filming him laughing in his face. In a way, it's bullying, but it's fantastic because it's Roy Keane.
Yeah, yeah. Because he will be hating that, wouldn't he, as well? Imagine being that uptight.
Yeah, I think so.
You ever heard his Roy Keane stories when he's on about, he's at Forest as like an assistant to Martin O'Neill?
No.
And they did like a little, just a bit of fun at the end of training, like a bit of a five-a-side or whatever. And whoever lost had to do 20, losing team had to do 20 press-ups.
Yeah.
And he watched the footage. Obviously, the film always film training. He watched the footage back, and a few of the lads only did like 17 or 18 press ups. You know, it's just a bit like. Mm. And he bollocked on the next day, saying it's about standards, and if you cut corners there, that's why you are where you are in the league, and it's unprofessional. You've got no integrity. And like Roy, we thought it was just a bit of fun, but he's like, he's kind of right, isn't he? Everything he says is kind of right, but you just think. Just leave it.
Well, his old double act, we were talking about him and Michael Richards being a kind of double act. His old double act on ITV Sport used to be him and Gareth Southgate. Do you remember them covering Champions League and England game? It was a bit horrible, really. It was a bit like, do you remember when Nelson and Martin used to hang out in The Simpsons?
Yeah.
It was a lot like that. Basically, like Gareth Southgate would go, well, I think really it was. And then Roy Keane would kind of shout over him for a bit. And then Adrian Charles, who was the presenter back then, would go, oh, it reminds me of when you nearly killed each other on the pitch. And they just show that clip of when they tried to kill each other on the pitch over and over again. That was the banter.
Where's he gone, Adrian Charles? He was omnipresent at one point.
Last I saw of him, he was writing a review in the eye paper, I think, about the benefits of nasal and ear waxing. So getting your ear hair and your nose hair waxed. So he's doing well.
Yeah, it's definitely a forward step. You know, I forget who's been cancelled. I lose track of who's been cancelled.
Well, quite a few over the last 24 hours from it seems.
Yeah, there was. Lawrence.
Yeah.
Comedians will make anything about them, won't they?
Yeah, they love to, yeah.
Comedians talking about football.
Not to get too heavy, but I've heard a lot of people saying today, quite innocuously, you know, after the like the racist tweets and stuff, saying that, you know, after how well they played and after what they could have been shit in every game.
That's
irrelevant.
That's what I said as well. I think I tweeted something out about it's just a shambles that this has had to be sent out today. When the FA put out a statement, and then England put out a statement. I just said it's a shambles that this has to be out today, you know. And I said, you know, you couldn't have asked anything more from these players. And regardless of what happens on the pitch, regardless, they could have scored five own goals. No matter what they do, they just don't deserve racist abuse. Someone responded to my tweet and said, Did you not see the state of those penalties?
Yeah.
So what are you fucking on about? It does. Yeah. It regardless of anything that happens on the pitch, football and outside of football, it's never an excuse.
So hard, isn't it? Because you know people say you've got to educate these people and all this, but at what point do you just say fuck up? Do you know what I mean you can't? Why is it on good people and people of colour to educate idiots?
Yeah.
What do you mean? Not only have you been racially abused, it's also now your job as well to educate these. It's just funny. It makes you sad, doesn't it? It really does make you sad. It ruins it.
It does make you sad, and I mean, I don't want to be one of these not all football fans things, but because there is, we do need to kind of remember that the majority of fans this summer have been great, and it's that's down purely to the team and Gareth Southgate.
That's the thing, it's a numbers game, isn't it? It's football, it's so widely watched and engaged with that, and you know, unfortunately there's some of when you're hitting, you know, 90,000 people in a stadium, there's going to be some questionable people.
I completely agree. And I was going to add to that, you know, I think this team and this squad and their attitude and what they've done has really captured the nation. That sounds a bit cheesy, but it really has captured the nation. It's brilliant that you've got players like, you know, Henderson tweeting support for a non-binary fan who, for the first time, went to a game in makeup and said that he, for the first time, felt welcome. And I think that's great. And I've also had, like, people I know who actively dislike football. Some of them comedians, actually, have said, this is the team I can get behind. And that is important. And I think that's why it hurts so much. This morning, if I'm honest, when I saw all the racist abuse and all that stuff, I didn't care about the score anymore. I thought I'd be spending all day sad about us losing, a final. But I'm not really. I'm more upset that this is what's happened, and these are the headlines this morning.
Oh yeah, so I have I've kind of experienced. So I play for the England Partially Sighted team.
Yeah.
And whenever we go to a tournament, the FA will tweet, "Oh, the Partially Sighted team have got to the semi-finals." The first 10 comments will be, "I bet they didn't see that one coming." Do you know what I mean? It's just like, one, it's just shit.
Yeah.
And two, it's actually not acceptable. Like, we take it with a pinch of salt, and we're not going to be upset about it. But it's just sad that that's people's go-to thing, you know.
Yeah.
But the women get it as well, you know. Women,
yeah, I was about football. To say, yeah.
Yeah.
You do just, get that. You get like just, a woman's achievement, and then the first 5 comments would be, "Who cares?" Or why? Oh, why? But how well do they practice penalties in the kitchen? And it was boring. It's so boring, and it's just shit posting. But
I think that's the way to get is to be completely bored by it. Do you know what I mean? It's just to be like, this is so boring. But it's sad that that's people's first thing is to, why can't you just be? I say it a lot at the minute. We're like, I don't know if it's just where I live, but there's like a load of like young blokes or men walking around, like trying, and their thing is to try and look hard.
Yeah.
And why don't you try and look approachable and friendly? Yeah. Why is it that? Why is it that we're not in prison? Do you know what I mean? You're not walking the landing of Belmarsh. We're just, you know, you just come out of a Costa. Chill out. What do you think? What do you think's happening?
Same here in Swindon, mate. I mean, where I live in Swindon is rough as fuck in some places. And you just see these sort of gangs of like kids, and you're like, God, lads, this is not Compton. Yeah. Compton meaning USA, not Compton, the village in Berkshire, which is a wonderful place, and I highly recommend it. Theo Walcott used to live there.
Oh, really?
So, but you just sort of think, what are you doing? This is Swindon, it's Wiltshire. You live in a town which is a punchline. Like, don't try and be the hard man of a punchline town. It's like trying to be the hard man of Ballamore.
It's weird what people think is important, isn't it?
Yeah, it's strange, we've woken up this morning, and I think we all maybe thought or dreamt that we'd be waking up to all this amazing headlines and celebrations of us winning a trophy. And as I've said, you know, the news around England and the England fans has been positive during this tournament. And what I love is that it's been more diverse and more progressive than usual. I mean, you've seen, you just need to look at the the Wembley crowd. It's been amazing. And then to wake up this morning and feel like we've gone back 10, 20 years, it's just fucking depressing.
Oh, and it's how quickly you've gone from feeling proud of the team and the country come together to that. It's like everything was fine when we were winning. Yeah. It was subdued, but then something goes wrong. That's people's go-to. It is a real shame.
It almost makes you feel like we didn't fucking deserve it in the first place.
Yeah,
do you know what exactly. I mean, it's shite. Exactly. You talked a little bit about playing for the England partially sighted team. Just tell us a little bit about that and how that came about, because of course it's great to have you on this podcast. I've been wanting to get you on for a while, but the issue is I remember we met at Jericho Comedy a little while ago, and me living up to my. But I'm such a fucking walking stereotype. All I want to talk about is football. So I think we got onto the subject of football, you and I, that night. Yeah. I think we both just got married as well. Not me and you together. But we both got to our separate other halves. We just got married. Yeah. So we're talking a bit about that. And then we're talking a bit about football. And I remember you saying that you didn't actually support a team.
Yeah, I'm a complete neutral, mate. I love football. But I enjoy football how people enjoy music.
Mm.
I just enjoy it, you know. Not got real allegiances to a team. Excuse me. There's teams I like to see doing well, and a lot of teams I enjoy watching. I love Burnley in the Premier League.
Yeah,
I love Burnley. Love Leeds. My granddad's a big United fan, so I'll keep an eye on United. I used to go to Forest with my mate when I was a kid. My dad's a Villa fan, but he's a bit the same as me. My dad, he's into it, but he's not tribal about it.
Yeah, I think that's what. I imagine that being quite nice, actually. I know a few friends who just put themselves down as, you know, would consider themselves just football fans. A few of them, because they were Wimbledon fans, and obviously their team liquidated, and then they didn't really catch on to the MK Dons or AFC Wimbledons. They just kind of became generic football fans. And I imagine it being quite nice. They still go to games. They still get to watch. Well, they still watch lots on the telly. And obviously, when it comes to internationals, you can get behind England.
Yeah, it's. I think you do miss out a bit. I've got a few mates that are real Villa fans, and you know they love their players. Feel a real affinity with the area and with the stadium means something to them and the history of the club. So you do miss out a bit, but I've just never felt that towards a team, unfortunately.
Do you think part of that comes down to the fact that you were playing quite a lot of football when you were younger? I feel like quite a lot of friends I have who are neutral.
Yeah.
It's because they're so involved in actual football clubs. So I've got a few friends who play for Hungerford Town non-league team in the in the Conference South, and because they've spent their whole life kind of just playing the game and, you know, kind of getting behind their own team.
Yeah, I suppose so. I've always played like every Saturday, and I'd play in, you know, playing every game I got asked to play in. So you're not, but yeah. I think it feels different when you. It's the same as comedy, isn't it? Like if you went to a comedy night now, you would enjoy it differently to a non-comedian who you were sat next to.
Mm.
So I don't know. I love individual players as well. I love watching play. I just haven't. But that's why I love it when England are on.
Yeah,
it's kind of something to
get behind.
Yeah, I always think it's mad how many men's funerals does it get mentioned what team they supported?
Yeah.
It's such a big facet of their personality.
Yeah, it'll probably be mine. If my gravestone doesn't have blue and white hoops on it, I'll be very disappointed.
So you Reading?
That's right, yeah.
Reading fan, yeah. Because they had the glory year, didn't they? They had
the glory year, 106.
Yeah. Because remember Bobby Convey?
Yeah.
He had one eye, didn't he, Bobby? He had one eye that... He was blind in one eye, Bobby.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, I can remember it. Because there's been a few players. We had used to have a player who played with us called Chris Holland.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember him. He played at Newcastle. He had an acid attack in Newcastle.
Oh, Christ.
He played in the Premier League. I think he'd set two goals up. It's like early 90s, and he went out in Newcastle, and there was an acid attack. Nothing to do with him. And he kind of turned and some went in his eye.
My God.
He played for like Birmingham and Huddersfield, and then like lower down at Guiseley. And then he came to play for us, and he was incredible. Such a good player, and such a nice person, not bitter at all. And I said, "What was it like?" My sight kind of gradually got worse, whereas his was like an instant thing.
Right.
So he was in a professional football environment. I was like, "What?" He said, "I literally had 6 months. Somebody throwing a ball to me, and me like half volleying it back to them just to try and get my depth perception
Blimey.
Back. So it was, but it was mad. Yeah, he was such a good player because he had, he was blind in one eye. He wasn't particularly fast and he still played it like Division One, Division Two. So you could, you know, you could tell how good he was.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
It's amazing that he was still able to do what he loved in a capacity. And if you don't mind me asking, Josh, so
yeah,
as you mentioned just then, so yours was a gradual issue with eyesight. Yeah. And in that, so did you begin playing non-league and sort of amateur football? And then did you eventually?
So I was younger than that. So it was like when I was like 15, 16, started to go. I remember like it was a goal kick. And it was like, fuck, where's that gone? And like the ball like, bounced right by me. And I just thought, oh, it's because it's under floodlights. I'm not good under floodlights.
Right.
And it was just like, it just got worse from there then. When it like early 20s, it kind of settled down. It's my central vision basically that is gone.
Right.
And it affects, so the game we play is futsal, which is the official, UEFA's official small-sided game is futsal. It's indoor in a court. Five versus five. It's a great game. Obviously, there's a fully sighted version of the game as well. Like England, they've got a team, and like I think Spain or Portugal are the world champions. So that takes a lot of the you know, that makes it easier. But even within that, so things you wouldn't necessarily think would affect you. So you basically going off people's body language. When you're playing football, you think, oh, they're going to make a run because they're facing to make a run. Yeah. When you can't see that, you kind of have to anticipate that what's going to happen.
Okay.
And the ball, you can see, you, if I was standing against you now playing football,
yeah,
I can see the ball coming to me, but you would have seen it so much quicker than me that you could, if you were quick and whatever, could get in front of me. So it's strange. And obviously there's different elements. So we've got lads that can see perfectly in one eye, but their field vision on one side is bad. Then you've got kind of people like me who are like, we've got lower sight, but mine is the same all around, if that makes sense. So I haven't really got any weaknesses visually, if that makes sense, apart from the obvious weakness of having terrible vision.
Yeah.
And then obviously the goalkeepers are fully sighted.
Okay.
Yeah, just to, it'd be chaos. If you get, well, France, we played France once, and they're a really good team, France. And their two fully sighted goalkeepers got injured, and they had to put a partial in goal. And it was like, I think we finished like 8-1 or something.
Oh no! Oh.
Yeah, I mean, he did well. He did as well as anybody would do. But what can you, you know?
Well, last time I played five-a-side, I was in goal for the whole game due to an injury, and I let in 14 goals. And,
wow!
I was only there to make up the numbers, and they hit the bottom of the league after that. So never got invited back, weirdly. Thanks. Never heard from them again, actually.
I think the league actually disbanded, actually, after that. I must have done, because I'm not got in touch. So.
Yeah.
It's always weird, isn't it, playing with a new group of people?
Yeah, I hate
it. You don't quite know, you don't know how to play, do you, really? I'm just very generous. I just kind of pass it, like, two touches, just give it to someone else.
Yeah, but with them, the futsal team, you've done really well. And I mean, it must be, I mean, it's great that obviously you're representing England. And, you know, I've seen photos from the tournaments that you've attended. Yeah. Well, you've done very well. You got through to the final, of course, and you've come home with medals. And
yeah. We've, so my first tournament was in 2013. Mm. That was a world championships. And we came sixth, and then in that time, last time we played was 2019 because of COVID. We got to the final and lost in the final to Ukraine, who they're so good. Ukraine, they're like kind of they're full time in their country. They're kind of professional athletes in their country. Belarus are the same, and Spain and Russia. There, so you're kind of always playing catch up against those. Do you know what I mean? I'm working and doing gigs and then out training. Do you know what I mean? It's a big commitment, but you know, you get to have these brilliant experiences. Like you get to, on a small scale, experience what, you know, the guys yesterday experienced.
Well, that's exactly what it looks like. I mean, you're England's number three. And we all know that's a good number, Luke Shaw, number three.
Yeah.
You know, it does look amazing, and it does have the profession. You all line up as well, don't you, for the national anthems?
Yeah, you do. Everything is literally... So you get there... So we arrive today.
Yeah.
Well, you do a few days in England first. You meet in England. And you do all your set pieces in England in case any other teams are watching. So you're not giving anything away. So yeah, a few days in England training, then you fly out there. You have, there's obviously an element where you have to get your eyes classified. You have big doctors in from around the world who look into your eyes and make sure you're got a legitimate thing and test your levels and all this. And then you have like your technical meetings where they do the draw. Each team has to bring a kit and, you know, your anthem on a CD, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Then you have the opening ceremony, which is absolute the worst day. The opening ceremony of a tournament that... A party-sided tournament in a country where no one gives a shit about it. It's at least like you're walking out with a flag and a sports hall to like empty chairs, just like you're too hot. You're in like a dress track, you're in like your dress track. So, and then like there's different rules. Like you get sent an England document before you fly out. So, there's rules about like what you wear to certain occasions. So, you at dinner, you're always in. You're always in like your smart tracksuit for dinner, like a PK and trousers. No flip flops outside the hotel. That's not allowed because you've only got if you're walking, you're in Turkey, you're walking down the street. If you only got to twist your ankle or tread on something, and it's a problem for the tournament, you know. And you can't eat anything outside of the hotel because it's just another variable. You could get sick or you could get. It's just. And so even before COVID, our doctor always made a big thing about sanitize your phone and sanitize your laptops.
Oh, wow.
You can't get ill. We're here to, you've got to be at peak for this thing.
Blimey. So you do get a lot of the experience that the men's and women's first team go through at major tournaments.
Yeah, they try and make it as equal as possible. Yeah, they try.
And of course, they get you all suited and booted as well. They get you all the kit, which is brilliant.
Oh, yeah. And it's... So I didn't realise. So I've got you get to keep your match shirt from the final or your last game. So I've got my red one for the final in Turkey, and I went to put it on for the first game to go to the pub. But obviously, it's not a replica shirt; it's a match shirt.
Right. Okay.
So it's skin tight. So it just looks you couldn't go to the pub in it. It's ridiculous. Because obviously the shirts the players are wearing aren't the shirts that you've got off the hanger in.
Yeah,
JD Sports. They're made differently, and it's brilliant. I've got my cap. My cap's here. I'd love to get my cap.
Yeah, get your cap out.
Not very good for a podcast light, but
oh, there it is. That's great. Just to say, you've got one of them is. You should wear that down the pub. I think.
To be honest, mate, I'll give them all away. I'll give them all away to pick. My granddad's got a few, and
bless you.
Just because these are things you know, people have been supportive of me and stuff, and
brilliant.
It's an artist, you know. It's not money can't buy them, so it's a nice thing to give. And then inside, you get your name in.
Oh, that's excellent! Look at that.
It's just.
But then you should definitely wear that in the pub because if anyone then kicks off, if you're kicking off about something, like, could you do any better than me? You'd be like, well, I don't want to. I don't mean to. Oh, did you see that there? Just the just me England cap.
It's just a mad thing to get, isn't it? It's just
it's fantastic
quality. Yeah.
Do you get support from the men's first team and from the FA and obviously the FA, but the women's first team as well? Is there?
So we'll get a lot of the time. We have the same doctors or physios because they are kind of from a pool of FA staff,
right?
And you also get picked up from So we had a training weekend 2 weeks ago, which I couldn't go to at. Loughborough. So usually would be at St George's Park based there. But because they've converted the hotel reception into a basketball court for the first team, we had to go to Loughborough. And the driver that picked my mate up, he said if England would have lost to Germany, I would have been taking Raheem Sterling today. But because we got through, I've been sent to pick you up. So it's and so we've got but not massively no, because it's just, you know, they're very busy people, but we might get a tweet off one of them, or we'll get like a good look message. Oh, Stephen cool. Gerrard used to be really good, actually.
Oh, brilliant.
He always used to send a message saying good luck and stuff. Ian Dowie loves it.
Oh,
he always sends a message. Paul Dickoff, weirdly. He's Scottish, isn't he, Paul Dickoff? he used to send a message. But it's funny. It's funny.
Oh, fantastic. And
actually, interestingly, Michael Owen's son has got the same condition as me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I think he was at Liverpool's academy, and they're like, why ain't he getting no better? He's getting worse.
Mm.
And it's like, oh, he's got this condition. So he might be around. It'd be a good PR thing in a few years, I think, if he's involved.
Oh, fantastic. Well, that's brilliant. And it's great to have someone on the podcast who's actually got an England cap. We've had Charlie Austin on, and I don't think even he's got one. So,
oh, has Charlie Austin been on?
Yeah, he's come on. Yeah.
Oh, he's a top player, isn't he?
Yeah, he's great. He's a great guy. So I was going to ask as well, how have you found the balance of the tournament and gigging? Because obviously gigging is back now, sort of post-lockdown.
Yeah.
And you mentioned you watched the Ukraine game at a gig. Have you been lucky enough to kind of avoid the big games with gigging?
Yeah, I had a bit of a look in the diary. I got the fixtures in my diary pretty early doors, but I didn't account for, because you don't know which route you're going to take to the final.
Hmm.
So obviously, you know, it's the knockout games, which I was getting caught. So I did one in Malvern where they moved the show earlier, and then I had to sit in the audience and put the game on after. Luckily, the gig had gone okay. Do you know what I mean? And then I had one in Wales for the Denmark game, and no one was bothered. Like I went to watch at halftime. I went to watch the first half before I went on, and there was just no one was there. It was mental. I like a thing. I was trying to get in a pub, and it was this guy like was taking ages to let me in. You know, like he's doing all the track and trace and the iPad. I was like, "Can we speed this up? Sorry to be. Can you just let me in?" It's like you know, Mr. Bean's character on Love Actually.
Yeah,
yeah. He's literally like that. I'm like, "Come on, let me in."
Oh, that's all right then. So you got
what about to you, Sam? Have you missed any?
No. I've been all right actually. The only time I ever sort of suffered a little bit was because I think the first gig I did back actually since lockdown was on the one day between the knockouts and the last group game. So the last group game happened, and then I had a gig in Wiltshire, not far from me at all. It was a lovely gig. It was with Robin Ince, so it was really nice. He didn't want to talk about football.
I can't imagine he's a big football guy.
But it was a really lovely gig to go back to. That was pretty much it. And then I managed to push back everything else till it was all over. So I kind of start again this week and next week, and then all the way through the summer, really, which would be really nice to get back to things properly.
People were tweeting yesterday, like plugging their gigs and that. I'm thinking, get real. Do you know what I mean? Who do you think you are?
It's a funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
Because of course, the reason we haven't had you on before is because the kind of the format of the podcast is a comedian comes on, talks about the team they support.
Right, I see.
Obviously, no, not supporting a team. I thought, great, you know, he's an England fan.
Yeah.
This was going to be the England special where we're supposed to be celebrating our Euro 2020 win.
Yeah.
But instead, we're not. But anyway.
We basically just FaceTimed each other. just showing stuff in our houses.
But I was good. What I get them to do is I say for them to pick a fantasy five-a-side team from who they support. But I want it to not be the obvious. I say, you know, if you're trying to troll someone, who are the kind of cult-like players who mean something to you who you might not think of? So I saw you at the beginning of the tournament change your profile picture to kind of various forgotten England players who've been capped over the years. So what I'd like to do is put together a five-a-side team for me now, a fantasy five-a-side team of England players. And I don't want your Rooneys, I don't want your Harry Kanes, I don't want your Bobby Charltons, of kind of cult-like players who you don't feel ever got a chance, maybe.
But have been capped,
yeah.
Okay. In goal, I'm going to go for... He was capped, and he probably played quite a lot, but very underrated as a goalkeeper. Tim Flowers.
Of course, yeah.
Fantastic goalkeeper. Look, real, real top goalkeeper.
Do you remember when Sainsbury's used to do those little World Cup coins?
Yes.
You remember them? Yeah. And everyone like collected them, and then everyone's dad said, keep hold of them, they'll be worth something one day. But because everyone kept them, they're worth fuck all now.
Yeah.
$11.99 on eBay. Saw it the other day. I had so many Tim Flowers that my mum lost a shit because they started to look like about the time £2 coins came in. And they're around the same side. So the amount of time my mum used to go to the shops and try and pay with Tim Flowers.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
He's a great choice. Right. He was always Seaman's number two, wasn't he? So
that's why, like in any other era, he could have been in. Okay, at the back, I'll pick a defender at the back. You know what? Again, could have been incredible. Jonathan Woodgate.
Yeah.
What a footballer. Unbelievable player. Midfield. I'm going to go...
Who was keeping Jonathan Woodgate out, do you think? I mean, Terry and Ferdinand.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Did Ledley he ever get a bit... I feel like he's the sort of player who maybe could have made Euro 2008, or maybe a bit earlier, maybe could have made the World Cup squad in 2006.
Yeah, quite possibly. Okay, who am I going in the middle? This would have been a great question to get in advance, Sam.
Yeah, it would have been.
I'm going to go. Well, I changed my profile to Steve Guppy.
Yeah, Steve Guppy. Leicester legend. Yeah.
Yeah, left side. I genuinely think he could have done a job on the left side when we were struggling.
Yeah.
Who else will I go in the middle?
Would have been the perfect replacement for McManaman because he was got a bit. Lackluster on the left, didn't he?
Yeah.
He overstayed did. His welcome, really, for Euro 2000, if you ask me.
Yeah, same. I agree. I'm going to go. I'm torn between two, but. I'm going to go. This is weird, but I'm going to go Ruben Loftus-Cheek.
Right, okay.
You forget what a big part he played in 2018. And then completely gone.
What happened with him? I mean, he went to Fulham, didn't he?
Yeah, and just
nothing
bizarre.
I thought he was that is an excellent signing from Scott Parker to bring him in.
That's what
excellent
I
playmaker. And he had him had a goodish sort of run at Chelsea, but wasn't necessarily making the first team. Went to the World Cup and then go to Fulham and you think this is going to be, I don't know whether, I think it might have been an injury, something like that.
Yeah, but possibly.
Unfortunately, yeah. I mean, he looked like he had a lot of promise to him.
And up front, I don't know how, mate, I want to change.
Go on.
Woodgate is out.
Okay.
At the back is Dion Dublin at the back.
At the back?
Yeah, he played at the back as well. Steve Guppy and Ruben Loftus-Cheek and Andy Cole up front.
Andy Cole.
What? And actually, Steve Bruce never got an England cap.
No, he didn't. He didn't. We can't technically use him then, I think.
Yeah, in world football, one of the highest ever scoring defenders.
Yeah.
Couldn't get an England cap.
That's mad, he never got in.
And Andy Cole up front with Michael Ricketts on the bench.
Love it. Absolutely love it. What's Dion Dublin doing at the back?
Actually, mate, sorry. I need Kevin Davis up front.
Kevin Davis.
He's my kind of player, Kevin Davis.
I love it.
That'd get whacked, that team.
That is a mad team. There's so many players in there. Andy, Andrew, Cole. I love that, why they started calling him Andrew. And I decided to look it up. Yeah. So apparently there's an interview where there's someone says, why are you called Andrew Cole? And he says, well, no one ever asked me permission to call me Andy. I was like, fair play.
Yeah, he has album releases albums. He does, you know, like rap albums.
Yeah, he did. He had a hit in '96, I believe.
A hit? Wow.
It might have been.
He wasn't in the squad for '96. That's a bold move, isn't it? Well, fuck you then. I'll bring you the song out. Okay, Andy. Sure. Okay, mate.
When was it out? Andy Cole. Oh, is it called Outstanding? Official chart. He's got his own official charts page. Excellent.
Wow.
UK top number ones, zero. UK top tens, zero. UK top 40s, zero. UK top 75s, one.
Just don't include the first four. You wouldn't include the first four, would you?
This is amazing. So it was released in September of 1999, which I think is fair play because it would have come off the back of the treble. When is it re-released in 2010? I don't know why. Got to number 68 in the charts.
Wow.
So
that'd worry me if I was a team. I hate to sound like Roy Keane here, but if I was a teammate of someone, I'm thinking, is he thinking of lyrics when he should be like, do you know what I mean?
Well, Roy Keane was in the squad then, so he probably, I hope he had a word with him.
Could you imagine him? Could you imagine Andy Cole coming in with his CD and Roy Keane being his captain? Don't bear thinking about.
Oh, mate. So that's a good, so let's, I want to try and get my head around Dion Dublin at the back. The only time I've seen him at the back is around the back of a semi-detached that's got real potential.
Stairs leading up to the bedrooms, yeah.
Yeah.
He played at the back. He'd go at the back for United and for Coventry.
He was a very diverse player, wasn't he? In the sense that he could go, I don't remember him playing at the back, though. Don't know why I missed that.
He could play centre-back, yeah. Usually it's the other way around, isn't it? Sometimes you throw a centre-back up front, whereas he could come back and just head everything. The game was different then, wasn't it? Do you know what I mean?
But very different game.
Obviously, he's a good football. He is, you know, a good player.
And he's kept me company every morning throughout lockdown, working from home. Yeah. What a guy! Well, Josh, it's been great to chat. I want to just finish with a bit of positivity, because as I said, I was hoping this would be a bit of a celebration today. We'd be talking about how we thrashed Italy 3-0. So I suppose first question is Southgate still the one? Does he still turn you on? Is football coming home again?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
The second question, however, is do you think we'll ever hear the end of Three Lions, because it's coming home has kind of been this long.
I don't know. That's a good
we're nearly
question.
At 30 years of hurt of that song. Do you know what I mean? And I don't really, it's my favourite England song.
Yeah.
But it is that sort of thing where we did, I think we've always loved the song, but it wasn't till the World Cup in 2018 that It's Coming Home became this whole hashtag thing and a real all that. And then it really came up here again. We got to the final.
I do feel like it has come home a little bit as well. You know, we got to a final at Wembley. Mm. Surely that's football coming home, surely.
Well, that's what people say, because I've got some friends in Scotland who say, oh, it's arrogant you lot saying it's coming home. You're never going to win anything. So it's never about that. It was written about football being held in England again.
In 1996, yeah.
Exactly. That's what it meant. Yeah. And it's just been sort of used in a jovial manner since. Yeah. But it does feel like now, instead of it's coming home, it feels like if we just keep sort of getting closer and closer, it's like, it's coming. It's coming home. It's coming home. It's gone. Like, that's what it's starting to feel like.
Yeah.
And how do you, I know we were talking earlier that it's very easy to go, well, I don't know, we'll just win Qatar instead. We'll win the World Cup instead. But how do you, where do you think England are going to be in, you know, in 18 months' time?
England cannot afford for Harry Kane not to play.
Mm.
Because he gets injured, Harry Kane, as well. He does break down, Harry Kane does, which it's just worked out well for us.
Yeah.
If Harry Kane's fit and can play, we could get to a similar stage again, semis, final. If, you know, it's not a given by any means, but yeah, why not? Maguire, Stone, just, I think, you know, they'll still be there. Largely, you say it with the same team, but you never know what's going to happen. You don't know who's going to come through and stuff as well.
Exactly. I mean, there's no way that in 2018 we thought we wouldn't be playing with, like, Dele Alli. In 2020,
exactly,
he was a very young player who we thought had so much potential, and unfortunately he's kind of Lord knows what's happened to him, really.
Yeah, it's a mystery. Absolutely.
But
mystery.
We saw the same thing happen to Luke Shaw, and there he was scoring in a final.
Agreed.
It's a funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
I guess, as I said, it was supposed to end on a more positive note. But, Josh, anyway, thanks for coming on. I've really appreciated it.
Yeah, no, I played yourself. You know what, mate? This day, I don't know how I feel today.
No, neither do I. It's a bit of a weird one.
This is, you've kind of, we're still in the processing stage of, do you know
We're in a bit of shock. I was going to mention to you as well. Did you see that Peter Crouch thing that's been on at like 1 a.m. on BBC One?
No. I saw he was doing something.
It's a bit bizarre. So it's him and Maya Jama who present it. And then there's like kind of a house band. They've got Alex Horn's horn section.
Oh, yeah, I've seen this.
So a lot of it is kind of Alex Horn's humour going over their head. Like they'll ask him a question and he'll kind of, you know, he's a bit surrealist in his humour and they'll just kind of look at him a bit confused. And it's mainly that. But it's become quite popular as it's gone on because of the success of the tournament. So they gave them an extra episode last night to do after the final. And it was the most bizarre television I've ever seen. First of all, Maya Jama didn't turn up. And then the guests didn't turn up. And everything was just a bit flat because they've kind of, because we've had so much success, every game is kind of Alex Horn and the band jumping around, singing
real
three lines.
Feel to it, yeah.
Yeah, that kind of a bit of fun. And last night was just a bit, it's a bit like Badil and Skinny used to do Fantasy football.
And
they did one live after we went out to Argentina. And it was just a lot of kind of sighing and trying to make jokes work. But
yeah,
it was that sort of thing.
That's a tough gig, that.
But the best thing on it, I think, was Rob Beckett, who was on last night. And I feel like he's the sort of guy who should be doing these kind of post-match shows.
Yeah. Did you ever listen to the Magic Sponge podcast?
Yeah.
Sorry to plug another football podcast.
No, go for it. I welcome him.
But he's on that, man. He's like, he's a bit giddy and got a good laugh and stuff. That's my problem on stuff. I'm not haven't got a very, not a very lively person, you know. Do you know what I mean? It's quite hard, isn't it?
I'd say you are. You've got a good. You've been great, mate. Been fantastic on tonight. It's been brilliant.
I just bore these, you know, stink these things out. But no,
it's been really good chat.
I've enjoyed it. So thanks for having me on, mate. It's made it. We've lived it for one more day, haven't we? Doing this,
we have. Thanks very much, Josh, for coming on. And thank you, everyone, for listening as well. This is now the. I know I said the last episode was the last episode of the series. It's now this one, as we did a Peter Crouch show and added an extra one on. So thank you for listening this series. Unfortunately, it wasn't coming home on this occasion, but we'll be coming back for the 2021-2022 season with some great comedians talking about football. In the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter and on Instagram with the handle @comtalkfootypod. So do follow us on there. In the meantime, I will catch you next season for more comedians talking about football. Thanks very much for listening.
Podcast Network.